do. I straighten the piles on my desk.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving.
I straighten the piles, but they're still piles.
Yeah, that's right. People come into my office and need this. You know, just to
find. Want some flavor in your water? Add lemon or grapefruit?
Really?
It's essential oil.
Let's try to find out who do we have back on the phone.
I'm here, Marilyn. Hi, this is Elena.
Okay.
All right, I guess. Well, we don't have Shane. Are you back on? Uh-huh. I think we're missing one more. We're missing Gene. Okay. Gene, you're not back on? Well, let's go ahead.
Suzanne, the operator voice said there were three people on the call. So maybe somebody just has an S on the line right now.
No, it's us and you two. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get started again? Secretary Williams has joined us, and so he's going to just say a few things about.
So as you've, first, thank you all for agreeing to participate and to provide your time and expertise. As you've probably figured out from your conversations already, we did not get a group of people here who agree on everything to come in. And that was purposefully. We want to hear the different inputs, the different desires, and then to try to come up with a way to make our system transition from polling place watching, which was the traditional method we used, to watching in a mail ballot system with a few VSPCs along the way. And so we very much, and I very much appreciate each of your willingness to lend your expertise. We try to get a wide group of people from across the spectrum, and both from the administration and from the watching standpoint, with a couple of legislators here who've been interested in election issues. And so I know they just finished a very grueling session, so I'm glad they're both here today, and thank you for doing that. But thank you each for your participation and your willingness to help. As has probably been discussed, there may be several different outputs that come out of this group. There may be recommended changes in legislation. There might be recommended changes in regulations. There might be some recommended best practices. And for some of you, you represent organizations that are not specifically under the direction of the Secretary of State. But most of the watchers and many of the judges happen to be the same in both municipal and special district elections and in Title I elections. And so searching for rules that will work for both is important. You know, as I was visiting with folks over the lunch break, Lisa and I were chatting a little bit about Sawatch County. One of the things that I think helps me as Secretary of State is a recognition that there are very different circumstances from one place to another. So I had the advantage of being the clerk and recorder in El Paso County. We had a new facility that we designed to work for our needs, and so we had a very different capability than when I was on the Canvas Board in El Paso County about 20 years ago, when there was this little basement of the county administration building where they were reading punch cards. But then I also having the chance to go to Sawatch and see the counting take place inside the county commissioner's hearing room. Is, again, a very different facility and not one designed specifically for elections, and one that was built, I don't know, 100-plus years ago, probably? Yeah. I'm not sure exactly. But there are a wide variety of circumstances that our governments have, a wide variety of resources they have, and so I appreciate each of you coming together, and we've tried to have people from smaller rural areas, from the urban areas, from both parties, from people who watch and people who administer. And so I appreciate you coming together to help us develop what can be the best set of rules. And I recognize, and I was talking to a couple of you about this during lunch, that there are probably going to be instances in which every one of you doesn't agree with a particular conclusion the overall committee comes up with, and that's fine. These are recommendations that come to my office for rules that go to the legislature. But we do want to try and come up with systems that do work most of the time and for most of the people, and then develop, you know, how you make that work in those other instances. So I just wanted to thank you each. I know there's a lot of time involved, and I know it's a little more details than just the come along and sing and we're all happy and yes, we like this, but it's really the details that are important. How does a clerk lay out the system so that watching can take place? And the more they know ahead of time, the easier it's going to be for them to do a good job. So thank you for being here, and I'll stick around for a little bit.
All right. I think before we broke for lunch, we were talking about the appointment process and possible delays that may occur from appointing entities, and then also to get through the kind of credential process. And so we had discussed an idea that we had sort of batted around internally of having an option for the final credential where either the clerk would sign off on the form, or the voter, or not the voter, but the watcher could bring their own voter registration attached to the appointment form and sort of skip that process. And so I wanted particularly the election administrators in the room to give that some thought, because I don't know how that affects your processes. So maybe Amber or Liz could, or Jim. I don't think Jean got, no, not yet. Okay.
I guess I don't understand the voter registration portion of it. So are they going to print it off of GoVote Colorado, or how are they getting that?
So, Liz, the way we kind of kicked it around was exactly that. And we actually first started with the idea that perhaps it was something that the appointing entity could print up, whether that meant gaining credentials to get access to our little bit heftier ability to search on GoVote, you know, like a like Mickey and special district DEOs and I think municipalities as well are able to get credentials to get onto our site to search folks. So there would be the possibility for the appointing entity to provide that form, and at the same time, and possibly even easier, for the watcher, him or herself, to just go to their record on GoVote, and the requirement would maybe be something to the effect of that it has to be, you know, a registration record that was printed, you know, within 48 hours of the time that you submitted it to the clerk, and the idea just being that then that way, you know, you don't have to go in and check them as soon as they get there, and it's probably oftentimes it was, you know, the walk-in folks, the folks who are not on your current list, where this would help just facilitate a speedier process of getting watchers into actually watching.
And this is, I think we would primarily look at it, you know, in the statute it talks about getting your list in the Friday before the election. So this would be for those sort of last minute appointments where we've had issues on the front end, and I'm not sure we have any county clerks here who've been sort of part of that process. But a lot of times when the watcher relationship starts out with the person showing up in the office with the form and the clerk not being there, and the clerk maybe being the only person who is authorized to sign the form. And so then the watcher leaves frustrated because they were there to watch, and you know, they were turned back because they couldn't get in because there wasn't anyone there authorized to sign the form and look up the credentials. So we're trying to think of ways to address that issue. So it may not be like a whole cloth thing. Maybe the ones that come in on the Friday before are all verified, you know, through your office. But maybe the other ones, we have something else that either they can bring in the form themselves, or we put a time on it that, you know, I just hesitate to ever say something's got to be done within an hour or something. You know, when you get down that road, it just becomes complicated for people. So this was one thought that we had, and maybe you all have others, but that's the problem that we're facing.
Suzanne, I'm Marilyn. I'm trying to figure out what problem it is that you are facing, because there's certainly no requirement that the clerk or the designated election official sign that form in at all. I mean, it's really that form is to be presented to the judge on site. And if the concern, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what concern we're trying to solve, if the concern is that the watcher is not an eligible elector, why not just have the appointing authority add that to their statement that they've verified that the watcher is an eligible elector and let it go at that? I mean, this doesn't seem like such a big problem that we really need to go through creating a lot more red tape.
Hi, Marilyn. This is Ben. Just in response to that, I think one of the biggest issues with that type of approach is, and I think Martha touched on it when she talked about their process for verifying, is that, you know, the Democratic Party has a very sophisticated means of determining someone's eligibility, and appointing entities across the board don't necessarily have that ability. And I think, on the clerk's end, they want to make sure that person who's coming to them is eligible, and it's not an extremely difficult or excessive amount of information to provide, you know, that voter registration record in order to just confirm that that's the case. And I think that even goes back to our very first discussion about, you know, the idea of certification of a watcher, training of a watcher, a watcher's ability to see personally identifiable information. It's just the idea that we have an efficient process for making sure that everybody follows the same rules for becoming showing that they're certified to be a watcher. And this is kind of the idea behind this, is to make it uniform, just like all of these other things, as opposed to having 64 different processes. It would be something that would streamline things and make it hopefully less onerous for both the clerks and for the watchers.
It doesn't sound quite that way to me, Ben, because in reality, what happens is you end up with a problem happening in an election. You call in some watchers to help with that problem. To go through a lot of requirement of, oh, you've got to prove that you're an eligible elector, when your authorizing agent knows that. In reality, we've been stalled for hours and even days while as the clerk says, well, I don't have time to do this now. We'll have to get back to it later. Unless there has been a big problem with people showing up and saying that they are eligible electors when they're not, I think we're putting in an awful lot of red tape that's not really necessary.
Well, Marilyn, we're trying to solve that problem that you just described. I mean, if we do nothing, then you continue to have the problem you just described. So,
well, I think that it's not nothing. I think it would just be helpful for you to do what I think you've attempted to do before, and that is to let the clerks know that there is no requirement at all for them to determine the eligibility. If they have a question, they can and they find the problem, they can certainly come challenge that watcher. I think it's just a matter of a little bit of clerk education, not creating more burden for the candidates and the parties.
Amber, you want
to? Yeah, so I don't think that any of the clerks have ever said they're determining eligibility for somebody to be a watcher, but they're confirming eligibility, meaning that we're, you know, verifying that they are an actual registered voter in Colorado. I mean, I can tell you in the last presidential, we had a bunch of last-minute watchers show up with credentials that were issued by one of the major parties, and none of them were registered in Colorado. They got flown in on an airplane the day before the election, and they weren't registered, and we wouldn't have known that without verifying their registration up front. So I think some sort of process where the watchers can present their information printed from GoVote or something like that would probably aid. I mean, the way that we've trained our judges is that if they're not on the sort of list that the party had already provided and they present a certificate that, you know, with a name that we don't, that we haven't seen before, the supervisor will look up the individual and then call in and verify it on the spot. I mean, so we've handled it that way, but, you know, I think that those have been one-offs. If there was a significant amount of them, then it's going to be a problem from a process perspective at each site. So I think I totally agree with coming up with some sort of way for these to be handled in a more efficient way to confirm the watcher's eligibility, because there's other pieces of the watcher's eligibility that has to be determined, that they're, you know, not an immediate family member of a candidate and sort of that table. And I think I showed that to you last time I saw you, Marilyn, was that table. And I don't know, I don't think necessarily that a lot of the entities are looking at those kinds of things before they choose watchers either. So I think, you know, all of this regarding eligibility is important to talk about and figure out how we can streamline the process overall for everybody involved.
Well, Amber, it seems like we're making two different assumptions. It sounds like you're assuming that you actually have the responsibility and the duty to confirm eligibility. And I'm assuming that there is no such statutory requirement that if someone wants to challenge a watcher's eligibility, they certainly can do that. But that there is no requirement, that it's left to the authorizing agent and the watcher to take on that responsibility for themselves.
Well, so then with given the eligibility requirements that are outlined, somebody has to verify that. So you're saying I think what the election official's responsibility is to confirm that, you know, the folks coming in, and I can tell you that they have not, the lists have not been perfect, nor the folks that have been signed up as watchers. Some have not been eligible to be a watcher in Colorado. And that those were signed off on by the appointing entities. And so without some sort of check or confirmation by the county clerk, there's no way for anybody to know that.
Well, I mean, I think that it is optional as to whether or not one wants to try to verify. It's just like verifying a voter. You know, we trust the voter to tell us whether or not they're residents, they're still eligible electors, et cetera. I'm suggesting that there also ought to be this, you know, taking responsibility for your organization if you're an appointer or yourself as a watcher, and that this should not require an investigation by the election official. Just my view on it. And certainly the statutes assume that the appointing authority and the watchers will be the control factor, not the designated election official.
This is Joanne Winholz. My question here is, if we're going to have mandatory training, aren't those folks already been vetted to the fact that they are eligible to be watchers?
Well, that's going to be up to the appointing authority and I guess how organized they are. I think the problem is that, you know, when we talk about the major political parties, certainly they are sophisticated enough to have access at the state level. But if it's a brand new issue committee that popped up that day, you know, I don't know that they do or they don't when they sign someone up for training. And so this is a separate issue as to whether, you know, there's some check that's done by the clerk to make sure that you are eligible. And it sounds like, at least in Denver's case, they've had some where the party has sent people in who are not eligible to watch in Colorado. And presumably they may have those people take training and not check the second part. Harvey?
So, Harvey Branscombe. So I'm hearing several different things that I think ought to be elaborated upon. One is the submission of the list to the county clerk and recorder that's listed in statute. I believe that is for administration purposes, to understand roughly how many watchers are coming. And that's a very useful thing for them to know, and I think we should I'm supporting that concept, but that's the name. That's not providing the certificate to the election official at some headquarters in a large county to determine whether or not all the eligibility considerations have been fulfilled. It's quite clear to me that the way the statute's written, the responsibility lies, it's an individual responsibility with the authorizing entity. And I think there is an easy solution here, which does involve providing access to information. So clearly those authorizing entities need to have access to the information that would guide them to understand whether or not a potential watcher is eligible. And certainly that would be supportable and should be provided. And GoVote Colorado sounds like it's most of the way there. And it sounds like if the certifying authorities wanted to ask their potential watchers to go look up their record and email it, maybe there needs to be a facilitation of that. But to provide that information to the authority could then attest to the fact that the potential watcher is eligible. And the person who would read that attestation is an election judge, not necessarily, or in fact, only in a small county might it be an actual designated election official or so who has appointed themselves as an election judge. So I think that actually may happen in Colorado. But in any case, small counties are dealing with a very small number of people in one location, and it's not really an issue. In a big county, having to find the clerk and recorder to actually authorize a credential is a big problem. It has been a problem. It's going to continue to be a problem until we solve it. But I don't see this. I see the solution right in front of us, which is we provide access to information to the certifying authority. Certifying authority attests to the eligibility of the watcher on a form that is then read by an election judge at the point of and the location where the watching is going to take place. Oh, and about the mandatory training, it seems to me that having some kind of process that proves eligibility before the training would be a mistake. Surely we want to have the training open to anyone. Now, whether the training actually triggers something that would help the potential watcher to prove eligibility, that might be helpful.
If I can interject here, I'm not taking any position on anything, but I just wanted to contradict my chief deputy. The parties are not sophisticated when you get into the county level, and I'm disappointed. No, but the appointing entity in a large part is the county officers. And having been a county political officer before, they are not as sophisticated at the local level as they are at the state. And that's why I'd asked each party to appoint a county representative here, and unfortunately neither of them are here today. So I just wanted to clarify, so as you're thinking of this discussion, the county parties and oftentimes are struggling to come up with people. They're using volunteers. They're entirely volunteers in many counties, and they don't, they are not operating in the pristine environment in which they check every single thing. And I'm not knocking either party. I'm just saying that don't ascribe to the local party more sophistication and technological savvy and other things than they may actually have. So, but I just noticed as I looked around that neither of our two county party representatives were here, and just wanted to add that clarification. So then I'll shut up.
This is Martha. I did want to just, on that point, our Democratic County representative had a death in the family, so he's not here today, and he's sorry to miss. I want to make two points. One, in response to Secretary Williams, while it is absolutely true the counties don't have the sophistication in every county that the state party has, we, and I think the Republicans too, try to run the operation out of the state party level. Now, it doesn't always happen that way, and I know you know that from experience. But we do try to do that. But I want to point out something else that I think part of this conversation seems to me to be a bit of a red herring. Because It is the clerks that are tasked with running the election. They have to run the election. And I think it's not appropriate to say that some outside party that may have an interest in gaming the system gets to decide the eligibility of who gets to be in the polling place. And I say that as one of those people. You know, I mean, truly, I think that it makes sense to me that the clerk gets to make sure that the appointing authority is telling them what they're telling them is true. So this notion that the statute doesn't require it, I think, is a red herring. The clerks are the designated election official for the election. These people are carrying out an essential, critical function in the election, but it doesn't seem to me that the clerk wouldn't have the opportunity to make sure that they're legit. So I'll stop there.
Martha, this is Marilyn. I wasn't saying that the clerk wouldn't be given the authority, but I think that any person has the right to challenge whether or not a watcher is eligible and should be there. And I'm just suggesting it should not be a prerequisite before that watcher gets on the ground. That just as, you know, a voter can be challenged in when they are voting, let the watcher be challenged at the time that they're doing their work, rather than having the process slowed down by the eligibility check, when in fact the authorizing authority should certainly be able to do that and attest to it.
And I, since we've done the, and this is Amber, since we've done the process where we allow the or give the appointing authorities the sort of Excel template, and they're able to just enter in all their people, it's actually much easier for them. They don't have to produce any certificates and sort of go through a manual paper process where they have to go take forms around to get signatures for everybody. So we've actually really designed the process to be more customer friendly for the watchers. I mean, there's work on our end, and it doesn't take, it's not like we just snap our fingers and produce certificates. I mean, we've basically carried the burden of producing the certificates for the entities to make it easier. And the process now is much more streamlined and easier than, you know, when it was before. And so we've actually taken the burden on of producing them and providing them and, you know, emailing them so they don't have to be hard copy, and making it as easy as possible for the entities. And I think that hopefully will be the goal here, because I think, you know, if you can make it easier for the customer, it usually makes it easier on the on sort of both sides. So, I mean, that's certainly why we put the process in place that we did. So it wasn't definitely not to keep anybody out. In fact, I think the only people we've ever not approved or given a certificate to was people not registered in Colorado, or candidates, because we have gotten candidate names submitted as well on the list of watchers by the entities. So candidates can't be watching for themselves, and so we also have to kind of remind the entities about that as well.
This is Harvey Branscombe. So I'm concerned we're getting down to the real meat of this issue, is whether or not watching is going to be considered to be is this an antagonistic potential against election quality or not? Because what I'm hearing is that watchers need to be checked more than voters need to be checked in terms of their eligibility, and that seems problematic to me. I think we're actually probably, by being so defensive about watchers, we're probably actually creating the atmosphere where the watchers aren't being utilized in the constructive manner they could be, and that concerns me. So, and I think it's going to be an undercurrent of all of our discussions in this committee. The one thing I'm hearing is that there are trusted entities who are candidates, who are political parties, or at least they're well known. Maybe they're not trusted. They're well known, and then there are pop-up entities which are not well known. Maybe we're more concerned about the pop-up entities that are special, political committees, right? Ballot issue committees. That we should be concerned about whether they are eligible to be the approving or the appointing party, the appointing party, more than we are concerned about whether the appointing parties are actually correct in checking the eligibility. But what I'm suggesting is they should affirm that they have checked the eligibility and given the opportunity to do so. And that's what's necessary. Maybe we also need a step to confirm that appointing entities are actually eligible to appoint. And there I would consider a more bureaucratic approach where the election officials involved may be appropriate. But it doesn't seem appropriate for the conventional entities that are already well understood, like the candidates and so forth. And they can be depended on to be honest about their affirmation of eligibility on an appropriately written form. So I hate to see all these things mixed all together and say, well, it's such a nasty mess, we'd better just have the election officials check everything for everybody all the time. And that's where we are now in some counties. In some counties, it doesn't happen that way, but in many counties right now, watchers are having to wait hours, days for the election official to approve, or just the physical process of handling it is a problem. Amber's suggestion about very high-tech, very IT-related way of handling watcher certifications is good for large counties, perhaps. Won't work for small counties because they can't deal with that. They're going to end up dealing with paper. So I'd like to see this as flexible and not obtrusive. And we need, hopefully, to solve the problem in the counties where it does end up being obtrusive for watchers who are being appointed by the well-known entities.
This is Lisa. Harvey touched on a point that I'm kind of struggling with, but I'm not sure if I can spell it out or explain where my concern is. But, you know, at this point, it seems that for the general elections, I mean, there's different rules for municipal and special districts. You have to be an eligible elector in Colorado. If you add a mandatory training and you do it as something that's early in the election cycle, what about the people who register to vote the day before the election or the day of the election, who are also eligible electors? And, you know, there are instances, especially, you know, if people are really attached to an issue or a candidate, where they might not have voted in an election before, but they will register just to vote on that particular issue. And if they feel that strongly about it, they may be willing to watch to make sure that things are handled properly in their particular precinct. But then how would you handle that? Because you've essentially set in some sort of discrimination in that if you're registered to vote by this date and you've participated in the training, then you can be a watcher. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm articulating the issue really well, but it just sort of occurs to me that if it's about accessibility and making elections accessible, and it's about acknowledging the citizen's role in an election beyond just casting the ballot, this raises a different kind of issue.
This is Martha. I think, but if you are a watcher, you have to be registered. So if you are being appointed as a watcher, your appointing authority should be able to, and the clerk should be able to determine that you're registered. Right?
But if you require mandatory training, who does not just need?
True. Yeah, I still am in favor of the training, though. I think, you know, if it would be available online and it would be an hour training and you'd have to take it.
Yeah, as long as we keep that in mind as we move forward and we define what is in that training and how that happens and when it happens, I think, you know, that might address that concern. Because I know people, you know, in my generation or younger, they will have not have voted, but, you know, there's some issue that they feel really passionate about or feel strongly about, and that's the point at which they enter into the process for the first time. And if they feel strongly enough about it, they want to participate and make sure they can have some confidence in the results of an election like that.
Hi, What made me think about when you said that is if these people have not been voting for quite a while and they just registered to vote, that means they don't know the election laws. And the comment that Amber had at the last meeting is we get watchers that are totally unfamiliar with what's supposed to happen. So those are the kind of watchers that should be educated. And if it's just 1 hour, at least they have an idea. Otherwise, what they wouldn't even know what they're watching for.
But isn't that the problem of the candidate or the operating, the authorizing authority? If they don't know what they're watching for, it's really not a problem for the clerk. They're just wasting their own time. But I think that it should be left to the authorizing authority as to what they want to instruct their watcher to do.
This is Elena. I think, Marilyn, to your point, the problem becomes if a watcher doesn't have the baseline of education, at what point do they become obstructive to the rights of the voters because they're asking questions or making challenges which aren't legitimate, or do they obstruct the process for the administrators? And I think those are two separate things, and they're both problematic. Now, it could be that that's addressed through another process, which is how our watchers were moved. But I think that there is value, and I think there's importance in making sure that there's a baseline knowledge before a watcher is allowed into the process, because they may not know enough to cause trouble, but that could be the actual source of trouble as well.
Yes, possibly, but, you know, an hour's worth of training is not going to teach everybody everything they need to know about, or that we would hope that they would know about election law. But I think you're right that we ought to focus on perhaps when there are problems, what's the process for removing a watcher or disciplining or, you know, whatever we need to do. But trying to set a high bar for authorizing
Sorry, Marilyn, I think we may have lost you there.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Yes.
Okay, sorry, I don't know what happened. I was just trying to say that unless there are significant problems, I just don't know that we should try to put so many requirements on the watcher on the front end.
I think when we at least from my perspective, this is Amber, when we've thought about training for watchers, I mean, I think it's just sort of a short training overview of the model in Colorado as an example. I mean, the training that I attended, and literally already 100 and some people had been trained by this entity, they were training on Texas law. I still have the materials if anybody wants to see them. And it did not contemplate anything regarding Colorado law and the requirements. They were training the wrong registration deadline. They were training the wrong residency requirement. They were training the wrong ID requirements, and we had this even as late as 2014, the 2014 November. We had to have a few discussions with watchers that had been through training with their entity, and they were incorrect about IDs. And I think the concern that I have, while removal is an option, we should do whatever we can up front so that all watchers that are going to be in the election process get at least a baseline consistent training or information about what the laws are on sort of the higher level, because if we wait until there's an issue and a voter walks away, even though they had the proper ID to vote, because they got, you know, were intimidated or were told the wrong information or, you know, for whatever reason, and that has happened. I don't think that that is appropriate, and I think we, at least it would be great to see this group, you know, come up with consensus for how we can provide consistent training just like we do with election judges. I mean, election judges are required to go through training through the state. VRDs go through training in various ways. And so I think it's absolutely appropriate for us to consider a similar type of thing for watchers, not to make it burdensome, but to make it more educational so that they can be more effective in the jobs that they're doing in the field as well and have the information that they need on a consistent basis.
and this is Harvey Branscombe, we seem to be drifting back towards the training question, where the, and the chair doesn't seem to be in the room, by the way, but the I thought we were discussing the process of checking or affirming eligibility and whether or not it's a good idea to have a proof of registration accompany the watcher oath, which is what I believe I heard the Secretary of State's office propose. And I think that's an interesting way of focusing the attention of this problem down, so that it shows who is responsible for checking the eligibility. I think it's important to transfer that away from the election officials and towards the entities who are doing the appointing. And if they have a way of proving that, or proving 99% of it in a documentary way, maybe that's a way to solve this problem. So I'm generally supportive of that, even though it's a slight additional impediment, perhaps. And it's certainly less than the impediment that's involved in a mandatory hour-long training. So, and I'm not against the hour-long training, by the way, as long as it's reasonable and it's not being used as an obstacle to watching. So,
thanks, Harvey. This is Ben. I think that we'd like to get moving on just because of our time constraints here. But from this particular topic, it's clear that there's some disagreement about the efficacy of that strategy in order to try to speed things up. So we'll certainly be sure to note that, you know, the idea of presenting that type of thing to the clerk doesn't have full support, but it's something that the group can consider once we've kind of bulleted out all of the issues that you guys have been talking about today, and something that you all can discuss later. But another question that we had for the panel is regarding the requirement under the statute that the entity submit names to the extent possible to the county clerk by the Friday before Election Day. Now, that's the current statute. We have a new election model that oftentimes leads to watchers wanting to engage in the process significantly sooner than that. And then outside of that, it's just the idea of making sure that clerks do have a good list of watchers, of the folks that they know are going to come. We know that there are going to be situations where issues might arise that require more watchers, or, as Lisa pointed out, watchers who are newer to the process. So that list is never going to be fully substantial. But our question to you all is whether you think that there is a more feasible time frame for submitting that list. And if so, is there a best practice for submitting lists to the clerks? When we polled the clerks, there was a wide range of differences between the way that the clerks got that list from the appointing entities. And this one also brings up kind of the reoccurring theme, which is that you have what I guess you'd call more sophisticated entities versus the entities that don't participate as much on a regular basis. And so you have, you know, differing processes based on that as well. So the real question is there a better time frame based on the new election scheme, and is there a best practice that we could try to help implement statewide in order to make it easier for entities to submit and easier for clerks to maintain those lists?
Well, this is Harvey Branscombe. So my first reaction is the Friday was written for a precinct polling place election that occurs on Tuesday.
Sure.
So Friday is pretty much irrelevant. I think the effect of having Friday written there is to remind the appointing entities that they should be paying attention to their watching, but probably they should be paying attention to it way before that Friday. So if we are successful, as far as I'm concerned, we will be seeing watching happening 2 weeks, 3 weeks before election. All those processes, the most interesting part, the most effective part of watching happens at the beginning of the election process rather than at the end. It's at the beginning where any anomaly that's taking place is going to show up. And that's the time when the corrections need to be made, assistance in resolving discrepancies. That stuff takes place before most watchers in the past have arrived on the scene. So we probably need, it seems to me that list, perhaps we need a reminder to the, at least the known appointing entities to make sure that they are paying attention to watching and provide lists. But I don't know if a single deadline makes any sense, but some kind of methodology for emailing names of watchers to the election officials does make sense. And certainly, as I said before, it's important for the purpose of planning. As a matter of fact, even before the, well before the ballots are sent out, it might be a good idea for the known entities to provide an estimate of how many watchers they think they might want to field so that the election officials could plan geographically for how to deal with those watchers. I didn't mean deal with, I mean facilitate, make it easier for them. Actually.
Right.
Yeah.
This is Liz from El Paso County, and I don't object to the Friday before, but I don't think it doesn't really apply anymore. So I guess I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. It would be nice, though, I guess as a convenience and from an election administrative standpoint, to maybe have the forms the day prior to the person coming in to watch. I mean, to me, that doesn't seem like an undue burden, and it allows then, depending on what decision this committee makes for looking the voter up or looking the watcher up to make sure they're eligible, whatever process that is, it allows us time then to be able to do that. So I guess that's what I would offer.
This is Jean from Garfield County, and I would agree with Liz that I would like just a little bit of advance notice, and I don't really know that it's really necessary to have actual names, but in our county, the times when the judges are working and the processes that people might want to be watching may not be happening the day somebody just shows up. And we can put a schedule out, but it depends on, how much is coming in the mail, what the ballot return, how quick the judges are working that day, and the judges kind of set those schedules themselves and determine, when they're going to come in. And I would hate for someone to drive a long way and not be anything going on in the office when they show up to be a watcher. So it'd be just a nice way to have some good communication.
So this is Harvey Branscombe. I agree with that. You just reminded me, however, of a incident where I was watching in your county, Garfield County, and I brought in a signed form that had on it I just want to give an example of how this problem is actually bigger than this group is probably recognizing it is, depending what county you're in. But I was rejected from watching one day by having a form that had listed on it a slightly incorrect description of the polling place. That it didn't say Central Count, it said the headquarters building or something like that. And I had to go back to the party to get a new form, which meant I couldn't do watching that day. So this process of actually doing the bureaucratic process of determining the eligibility of the form is a problem for watchers. It really is. And we need to make sure that that process that the county clerk and recorders can do, whatever it is, isn't going to have that effect it had on me in Garfield County.
Well, Harvey, I remember it a little bit different than that. But, you have to also realize that the rules and the directions change. And it looks to me like we are coming to a more general type of appointment form and stuff. The process has changed. And, that may have happened. I don't remember it exactly that way. But, what I'm saying is that it's just nice to have some communication and, with the whole way we're doing elections now, the processes have changed. And smaller counties don't start counting or processing their ballots exactly the 15 days before the election. They don't do signature verification every day, depending on the amount that it's come in and stuff. So there's just a nice way to have some good communication about what the process is. So when the watchers do show up, there's something for them to watch.
Well, this is Harvey. I wholeheartedly support that, particularly the access by the watchers to what there is to watch. That's a really important information flow. And I'm definitely not opposed to the any idea which causes the presence of the watchers to be known to the officials for various reasons. So, yeah, and I hope we are moving in that direction you just mentioned. Yeah.
So we just had that very long discussion just prior to this one about the idea of either the watcher or the appointing entity submitting some sort of proof of voter registration, at least in the instance of that person not having already been somehow confirmed by the clerk, whether that was through that person's name being on the list or whatever. And what I forgot to do before moving on was ask whether or not we could just get a poll here of folks' thoughts on that. So why don't we do what we did similarly in that last instance and just take a vote. If you could raise your hand within the room whether you would support a process like the one that we described. And so that would be either the watcher or the appointing entity providing a proof of registration in lieu of the clerk having to look it up. It would not, well, actually, I guess I'm not sure, Suzanne. I don't know if it would be necessarily a requirement. I guess we could vote on both, whether that would be a required piece that they would submit with the certificate or whether that could be something that could be submitted in lieu of the clerk needing to go back and check the watcher, because you could certainly have both. You know, if for some reason the watcher doesn't have access or is unable to provide that, you know, then the clerk could follow the same process that we found most clerks already follow, which is looking them up. But I guess the question is, would you support the addition of that process whereby the watcher or the entity would provide that form when the watcher submits a certificate so that the clerk doesn't have to look the watcher up and score?
Then is there a baseline assumption that the clerk does have to look up the person and score? I want to make sure that I know.
Okay,
exactly,
well, let's take a vote on that so we can disregard that concept and then move on. All right.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Who in the room thinks that that the clerk needs to, or have that authority to look the person up to determine eligibility? Let's take a vote on who believes the clerk has that authority.
Has that authority or must?
All right, we got one, we got what, nine in the, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the room. Anyone on the phone?
Suzanne, if the question was whether or not they have that authority to look up the person, I certainly agree with that. I think every eligible voter has that authority. So
they have the authority to require it. They have the authority to require it before they credential somebody.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
All right. Anyone else on the phone believe they do?
This is Elena. It's been my experience that that is the practice. So, yeah, I thought that that was a requirement on the official side to verify the eligibility. And I would, yeah. So, yes.
All right. Who do we have that's a no?
I'm a no. There's no statutory authority for that.
All right. We got four that are a no. Anyone on the phone? Anyone else on the phone?
I would agree that it's not a statutory authority. I think I've heard Amber use the word confirm. Just somebody in the process, whether it's the appointed entity or the committee or the candidate, it's a requirement in statute that they be an eligible elector. So there has to be some verification of that requirement,
okay,
whether it's the clerk or somebody else that does it.
All right. So we're
not necessarily.
Okay. Well, we're past that issue because that's the vote. So now we're to the issue of assuming that that is the baseline. You know, who supports a process where you could, in lieu of having that check on that side, you could bring in the form attached to a voter registration. That's where we're at now. Everyone who's in favor of that process, sure, go ahead, Martha.
So I have a question about that. I would hate to see the current system that we have go away, but I'd be interested in hearing from Amber about whether that would still work for her county, for example, in some of the large counties where we've got this pretty streamlined system where the parties submit the voter ID number with the name, and then it's a system where they look them up. You have a program that looks them up and verifies them. Yeah. So it would be a lot more work for us to have to pull thousands of copies of the GoVotes page for each one of those people. Now, if that's, I mean, I guess maybe the way I would like to see it is that if the clerk is amenable to the other way, that we are still permitted to do it that way. And maybe there's a deadline, you know, if you don't submit, if you're bringing late people to the game, then you have to prove their eligibility. Yeah,
that's really what I'm thinking, is that it's a choice. I mean, you as the appointing entity can choose to have, you know, the clerk go through the process, and we'll assume that that's done in their regular course. Or this would be a way that you don't have to wait for that process if you're a late appointee.
So this is Harvey. So then the submission would not be to the clerk, but at the, or what would, to whom would this be submitted, I guess is the question. And what would be the response to that? Because it needs to be at the point where the watcher is actually being given access to the polling place or so, where that decision is made.
It's presumably wherever you would take your watcher form.
Right, when you're in possession of the form.
Right.
Yes.
Right, so in answer to that, Harvey, this has been, we would, I think if I understand what you're getting at, we wouldn't require that you necessarily go to the county clerk and recorder's office versus if you're showing up at a voter service and polling center, that would be sufficient.
This is Joanne. I just want some clarification. So we are saying that with the last vote that the county clerk has the confirmation responsibility for the watcher. What happened to the appointing or authorizing person, their authorization of that watcher is not enough then? Do we still have to have the county clerk do it?
Yes. There's nothing on the form right now where where the appointing authority would say they have confirmed the registration. And I'm not hearing that that's really what the appointing authorities want to do. They prefer to have the clerks do it, but in a case where it's a late person. Yeah, it's not on the form right now. So this is a circumstance where, we have lots of issue committees or small committees or county parties who don't have access to even look the person up. So this is a way that rather than having to wait for the clerk, they could show up with their voter registration attached to the form. It's basically what we're discussing. So I guess we wanted to take a poll on people who are in favor of that being an alternate process. All right, at the table we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Whoop. Oh, okay, we have everybody at the table. How about on the phone? Do we have any no's on the phone? All right. Well, that will dispense with the next topic if that one had failed, which was, do we want to put timelines or, you know.
Right.
Because I think that then offers an alternative kind of a self-help alternative so that you're not stranded out in the office. We never did circle back to that. What?
This is Marilyn. Can you go back to the previous question, not the last one, but the one before, with the vote with respect to the responsibility and authority of the clerk to check on the eligibility? Were we essentially voting on making a statutory change? What were we voting on there? Just what our opinion was, or were we voting on a decision to propose a statutory change?
No, I think everybody who, speaking for myself, I was voting on how I interpret that statute. And so currently the clerks have that authority.
Authority, but not responsibility.
I'm sorry
to be difficult on this. I'm just trying to make sure I understand, because I believe that your guidance to the clerks in the November election was that, in fact, they did not have the responsibility to check eligibility, that wasn't a requirement. And I'm trying to understand if we're now saying it is.
I never said it was a requirement. I said that they had the authority to do it, to require it. If they want to check
the... Well, that's the thing that...
Okay,
that,
well,
that
whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it gets us to
what
this...
we just have voted on, but okay.
All right, we never... Now I lost my train of thought. We never circled back to that issue with the... where the county is... The person in the county party is not available. Did we want to... I think we could, to maybe alleviate that problem, and maybe it wouldn't be controversial, but maybe the party people can tell me if it would be, that we put something in the statute that allows it in the alternative. Yeah, that the county chair or state chair, and then let the two groups work it out, but that so that there is a mechanism to go and get the state chair approval if you can't find the county chair, or if there's, then we don't even have to define, county chair is unavailable. We can just say county or state chair.
Suzanne, this is Marilyn. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, this is Martha. I agree.
Okay. Is there anybody who disagrees with trying to offer language like that in a statutory change so that we can... All right, let's put that down, Ben, for a cleanup.
Will do.
All right, what's next?
So we kind of jumped around a little bit on my list here. Bear with me for where we ought to head next here. So one little thing that we could actually touch on real quick, if Steve, you wanted to bring up the current certificate of appointment. Something that's so basically, I think what the panel has voted on is the fact that while the process does not need to change if the county has a good process, there could be this new availability of a new process. One thing that's missing from the current form, though, and is an issue particularly with what I keep calling walk-ins, folks who just have that certificate and haven't gone through much other process, is the idea of providing a little bit more information for the county clerk to look up that voter in SCORE. For example, I think you all require, at least when the entities are sending you stuff, the voter registration, their voter registration number, if they can. At this point, John Smith becomes a watcher, and the current form is just simply lacking information to allow the clerk to look them up. So for example, just some sort of minimum amount of information like birth date, so that the clerk has the ability to look them up. Any thoughts on that? And I think that this might very well be an issue that smaller counties would face because they're the ones who are simply going to be getting this form, and they will not have even gotten an email or anything else giving them a list of watchers or potential watchers.
I think that'd be helpful. And this is Amber in Denver, and we, on our Excel template that the entities submit, I think date of birth, and it might even just be year of birth, but it's
right.
Residential address and then year of birth, and then we can use that matching criteria to make sure that we check it against the
right
individual. So it's helpful if there's more.
I think that, Jim, that this was one of the responses from your all's survey when we sent out that survey, and I'm not sure if that was you or Mike who was putting that together, but would year of birth be sufficient for you? Okay.
So we'll just do year?
And then I think in line with maybe Harvey's comments, we would modify the form. Does the form specify like a specific polling center or something? I mean, maybe we want to make that form more general.
Right. Just to make the form more general as something that can be used once. And so the person doesn't have to have a separate form at each location. That was another issue that we had brought up or that we had thought about, which is how would we be able to streamline the process? I think this one on would be mostly for watchers, where some counties have required a different form for each location, and that the watcher fill out a different form each time versus a process similar to Denver's or in some vein where you have one time where the watcher fills it out. I don't know if perhaps they would need to list the areas that they can visit, or if the consensus would be that once you're a watcher, you are entitled to be a watcher, at whatever location you choose.
This is Liz in El Paso County, and I'm wondering with that process, though, how they have to surrender that form. At least this is the way I think of it. They surrender the form at the VSPC. So how are, and if they're a walk-in watcher and they just have one blanket form that they turned in at one VSPC, how is the other VSPC going to know that they're eligible there as a watcher? I don't understand that whole concept.
The way that we've been handling it is the entities submit their full list, and so we communicate that to all the sites. Then we issue them basically one certificate that lists all the sites they've requested to be at, including the main office potentially. And then as they go in, they'll sign in. They'll put their entity, their name, and then whatever their cert is. The judge checks that. So the first time they show up, they administer the oath, and then the election judge signs. And then if they go to subsequent locations, they keep their certificate if it's issued from us. If it's a certificate that we haven't issued, they're going to have one for every site because we've never seen them before and the judges don't know. But if it's one of ours, they know and they can see the various sites that they're going to go to. And so we let them keep the one that we produce because then they can go from site to site. The oath is already taken care of. And then they just sign in and out. And that's how we can also deal with the whole one person per entity in each sort of area or what have you. So that's how we've handled it. And we let them keep it if it's a certificate we've issued. And we literally list out all the locations that they've requested to be at right on the certificate. So we populate all of that right on there.
So what would you think of something like that as maybe a best practice where we would put the certificates on the site and you could, borrow from those or fill them in as a way so that people don't have to go back and try to get their certificate back or print 50 of the same thing in case they're going to move from place to place. That's really a question for the administrators because I can't imagine any of the watchers are going to have issue with getting a certificate and probably just make it easier for them. You see any issues with it from the county level to issue that certificate?
I've got a quick, this is Joanne, I've got a quick question. If we had it on the form, although this form looks pretty full already, listing those, well, locales would be a little, I don't know, never mind, it's too cumbersome. I thought if you had a checkoff box, so that, you know, it could be initialed when they served at a particular location, then they could take that form with them, should they want to help out at another location, but it would require a different form. It wouldn't fit on this one.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what Denver does, is has a second form. I mean, it's called a certificate, right? But you turn around and issue that certificate to the watcher, and then they keep it with them throughout the election.
Yeah, so we basically, it's this, but we only put the relevant. So the main part of this form and why it kind of takes up so much space is that it lists out all the different types of elections. So like in a coordinated, we'll only put the coordinated information, and then there's plenty of space to put all the sites that they can go to. So we customize this, and then we have our seal on the top so the judges know it, you know, is already taken care of, and my signature's filled in, and then the appointing entity, we load the signature on there. So we're just, I mean, in a way, we're just administratively producing the forms for the entities as a customer service, even though we're not legally required to, just so that they don't have to print all these forms, take them around to get signatures all over the place, and fill them out manually. So this big box in the middle, we only put the information relevant to whatever election it is on there, which that might be a good way to handle it so there's more space. So it's just one form for us.
And do you have like just a county-wide designation where, or do you list, I mean, how just does someone ever send you a form and say, I want this person to be able to roam the county?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just put all sites.
So then you just list all sites individually?
Or we just put all sites.
All sites.
All
okay.
All voter service and point centers, and then the main office. So
right. Okay.
So this is Harvey. In my experience, many counties have already adopted it, not bothering to specify the site. And I would propose that the only reason to have that might be if the appointing entity wanted to limit the watcher to a particular site.
Right.
But from the county point of view, there's no point in all that does is generate extra paperwork in the small counties using paper, where the party official, like myself as a Democratic chair, would end up making extra copies of things in the case that a particular watcher needs to go to a different location. It really is a waste of paper and a waste of time. And so many counties I've experienced have dispensed with it altogether. And it wouldn't be great to have the forms require you to specify the location. Or there should be a little checkbox that says all, and then right. Or blank, you know, so that the
right.
appointing authority can put in.
And that's how we do it. And I do, some watchers are not eligible to be at certain sites. So, like, if they're running in the district, like, so there's the interpretation of if they're, and this happened with polling places, and it's similar to voter service centers, but if they're a candidate in that particular district, they may not be eligible to watch there, but maybe they can watch at another service center. So there's kind of that whole discussion too. So that could potentially be why an entity may want to prevent them from going to every site potentially. So.
All right. I think we got good notes on that.
Yeah, we have good notes on that. So we'll kind of put that down as more of a best practice. I don't think we would need any specific changes for that. Okay. So we've actually basically covered the main areas that we were looking to cover today. One piece of this that we put in the agenda as part of this process is the oath itself. And we do at some point want to get to the actual language of the oath and what that language should be. But it was our opinion that each time we have one of these meetings, and particularly the one where we're establishing what it means to be a watcher and that type of thing, and what they have access to and what they don't have access to, it's at that point that we'll be better informed to actually craft a new oath. So I think that that's something that we're probably going to want to wait on. So I think other than that, unless anybody has any other final thoughts for the day or anything like that.
This is Jim. I just a thought of clarification. We had also talked about somehow being able to identify who in the appointing authority is authorized to sign these. And I thought maybe we were going that way when we talked about the super user to be able to create these certificates, thinking that they would be credentialed by the Secretary of State. I'm a state committee. This person has a password or whatever to do this. Are we still on that page, or has that been discussed? Or,
well, I don't think we did necessarily discuss it. I do remember that you brought that up early on, Jim. And is it correct that kind of what your concern mostly is would be with, for example, issue committees, whether it's actually an issue committee?
Issue committees tend to be where it's focused because the major parties, we obviously know our county parties, who's signing those. And but we don't always know for state committees, issue committees, school district committees, that type of thing.
So who is the appointing entity then, Ben? Is it the registered agent or?
It is. So yeah, I mean, I think the hook there is obviously that you, right, it doesn't specify in statute who the person is. It doesn't say the registered agent of the issue committee, but I think that would necessarily be that individual because they're empowered to speak on behalf of the issue committee for campaign finance purposes. And the fact that you're registered as an issue committee is really the documentation I think you would probably be looking for. So I don't know what the panel's thoughts would be about, some sort of documentation or something like that. I mean, you know, your ability to get that information is fairly easy from our tracer site. I don't know exactly how that would work, but I would think that, if it was something that we were to do, for example, in rural or something like that, it would be maybe a two-step process of showing that it is a registered issue committee, and second, that it's the registered agent who is signing on behalf of the issue committee or something.
So that might be, I mean, we wouldn't have a list because that's such a flux. You know, issue committees you can register and, 10 minutes later you're an issue committee. But we could do a rule that, who that appointing entity is the registered agent. And then maybe flesh out a little bit more about the party level too, because we've had issues where, the vice chair signing or the secretary or someone else is signing, and then they do or they don't have authority to sign for the party. So maybe, I mean, sometimes it does happen within the parties too. So maybe something like that.
Yeah, any type of clarity from our perspective would be beneficial.
Okay.
And I think as well, when the issue committees submit to us, we look up in Tracer to make sure that they actually are an entity, and the judges wouldn't be able to do that in the field. I mean, they just wouldn't have time. I mean, so I think that's another reason why these going through the county to make sure that they're registered appropriately is also important.
Okay. So maybe we can write that out in rule or in best practice, the steps to go through. Okay.
Harvey, perhaps, include the registration document from Tracer as part of, for the purpose of a committee, along with the eligibility, the score eligibility document.
I guess we could think about doing that too.
I mean, right. I actually agree with Jim Candelari about the concern about these committees which pop up, which may or may not be credible. And I still think it's worth discussing how to address their credibility or establish that they're known. But I don't want to do that right now. I had two other things I wanted to mention that I wrote about in my document that I sent to the committee. One was about the potential for a watcher to carry two different certificates. And I think this is a very rare instance, but I actually did that, and I was not allowed to use both of my certificates in one or two counties. I don't think it's a big deal, but I do want to put it on the table. But the other thing I think is a big deal is back in watcher eligibility, where it says that if selected by a party chair, must be affiliated with that political party. I actually don't know why that exists, because the political party is perfectly capable of defending itself by certifying or choosing its own watchers. So why would the Democratic Party be disallowed from using a watcher who's affiliated with the Green Party, for example, in addition to unaffiliated? And I just wanted to float that, because it seems to me it's odd that restriction's there. And that actually caused me to unaffiliate myself, you know, for the purpose of watching. So it actually was a problem for me.
Well, this is Martha. The political parties want you to join their club. And if you join their club, you get some privileges. And one of them is to be a watcher for them. Now, unaffiliateds are allowed because they haven't picked a team. But they haven't picked a team. Why on earth would the Democrats credential a Republican watcher to watch for the Democratic candidate? Or a Green Party watcher? Or a Libertarian watcher? It's not... It is a perk that comes with being a major political party.
Would the party have the opportunity to make that decision on a case-by-case basis? That would seem to be the advantage. If you see it,
all right. Next topic in 2 weeks is what?
It's going to be accommodation.
Okay.
And I'm going to let Melissa and Vanessa correct me if I'm wrong, but we will obviously be compiling all the information that you all provided us today and kind of revamping this map in order to incorporate what we can on there and the things that you all have come to agreement on, as well as things that we've noted, and then probably something to the effect of just kind of a bulleted list of the topics that folks brought up. And I'm just not going to tell you what day we're going to give that to you. We'll get it to you as soon as we can.
All right. Then we are adjourned until a couple weeks from today. All right. All right. Thank you.